The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle. This is the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. We are sponsored by Fiorello Barbell Company here in upstate New York, where we're not the biggest, but we're the best. And our motto is, we don't try, we succeed. Today's show, we're going to really hit upon something I love to talk about. It's called ligament and tendon strengthening, and we're going to focus on the squat. And for all of you who aren't familiar with my Tuesday guest, good friend, we've done business for over 20 years, and I've been pretty much following Roger wherever he's gone. And Roger's been on his own now for a number of years. And I want to introduce the president of Atomic Athletic, Roger LaPointe. Rog, welcome to the show, brother.
Thank you, Eric. Yeah.
While we're on you right now, before we get into today's show, give everybody a little bit of a bio on you that, you know, for those who aren't familiar with you, you know, give them a little history of you and the company and what you've got coming up.
Okay. Yeah. Just on me, you know, I got into lifting weights to help other sports when I was about 10 or 11 years old. And my dad introduced me to the weights in the basement, which I had just always seen there as a kid. And there were these globe-type barbells down there and kettlebells, and I didn't know what they were because I was a little kid. And he started showing me some things to do. And one of his idols, you know, the guys that he really looked up to was John Grimmick was his guy and the Hoffman books. And, you know, I was a kid. I had no idea. I had no idea that the barbell set we were lifting on was my great grandpa Jackson's barbell set that he bought new in 1919 from the Milo Barbell Company. It's a turns out it's a highly collectible today.
Oh yeah. Now, Rod, you don't have that, do you? That went bye-bye, right? You don't own that, do you?
Well, I don't own it, but my dad does.
Oh, your father still got it?
Yeah. Yeah, in
fact. Oh, jeez, man, that's awesome.
Over the years, because you know, that set's kind of a complex set. It's got a lot of parts in it.
Yep.
Some of the parts had gone missing, and the wooden handles on the kettlebell handles had I don't know if they rotted away or they broke or what happened. Oh, yeah. But I got an original handle from somebody and had it duplicated actually in bird's eye maple. I think it was originally oak, but I'm not sure. You know, I've seen a lot of different handles on those Milo kettlebell handles. But they, you know, my dad's restoring it right now. You know,
wow,
putting you know, a black lacquer paint job on it, and he just one of the shot loading port plugs was missing, but he had the other one. And my dad is a retired electrician who is also a certified welder and, you know, sort of jack of all trades in the manufacturing world. Yep. And he duplicated the plug. So, you know, all the plates are still there. The original bar, the original dumbbell handle, it's, you know, it's the real deal. It's really, really cool. And it's when I hear people saying that, like, the Russians invented kettlebells and that kind of thing. Yeah. It kind of drives me nuts.
Yep.
Because that's marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And it ignores history.
Mm-hmm.
When marketers rewrite history, that drives me crazy. My undergraduate degree is political science. Took a lot of history, philosophy, stuff like that. And so when I see that type of thing, it actually drives me crazy. It's like nails on a chalkboard.
Absolutely.
I've looked it up. I believe 1899, Alan Calvert had the first patent on a kettlebell. And that's not to say that they didn't exist beforehand, because they certainly did. I mean, there are photographs of them existing. Apollon used to use scale weights as part of his show, and it is well documented in numerous places on posters and all that sort of thing. And that was years before that patent ever came out. I have a photo, and you can actually go see these things from Holland, Michigan. Holland, Michigan has a little reproduction Dutch town.
Mm-hmm.
And as in a Dutch town, as it – parts of it as it might have existed in Manhattan when the Dutch owned Manhattan, right?
Yeah.
Well,
yep.
One of the buildings they've got there is a scale house.
Mm-hmm.
And just as you might expect, it's for weighing freight for mm-hmm. boats. And the scale looks like one of those classic little balance scales where you put weights on one side and your gold coin on the other to make sure that your gold coin really weighs what it's supposed to weigh, that kind
yep.
of thing.
Yep.
Except that it's big for freight. And a friend of mine took my picture standing on the scale when we were backpacking in that area and we were grabbing lunch. We saw this thing, went in. Well, sure enough, the weights on there are original weights from the 1600s, okay?
Wow.
And
yeah.
If you look at a number of the middle-sized weights, I think 50s, 20s, 25s, that kind of
mm-hmm.
increment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not in our normal poundages. They've got equivalents there. But the handles of that size of weight look like a ornamental type handle. With the cast iron, they put more mm-hmm. effort into it, into cast iron castings than they do today. They're an artistic element to it. But it looks like a kettlebell, solid cast iron kettlebell with a little bit more ornate handle. The lighter weights, the equivalent of like 1 pound, 2 pound, 3 pound, kind of thing,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
are actually brass bells like you would have for hand bell ringing in a church
mm-hmm.
without the, I think it's called a klaxon. And if you think about what that would be, that's a dumb bell.
Bell, yeah.
It's a weight.
Yeah.
So the key is that you know what the weights are. You balance it with your freight. Well, if everybody in town knows that these are the accurate weights,
mm-hmm.
then wouldn't it make sense for the competition, for the strength competition at your midsummer's party or whatever you're doing, would be with the accurate weights that are in town.
Sure.
That it just makes sense. And here you've got a blob of iron with a handle on it. Let's see how many times somebody can lift it overhead. Okay,
right, exactly.
This guy's using this technique. We'll call it a snatch. That guy's using a technique that we call a clean and press. This guy's jerking his press. Mm-hmm. Let's do two-handed clean and jerks with these scale weights that have handles on them that
mm-hmm.
we now call kettlebells. It's you can look at that as archaeological evidence and
sure.
the historical evidence where you've got somebody like Apollon actually using scale weights.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Inch shows block-type scale weights called an avoirdupois handle, where it's a rectangular one with the handle cast in it so that you could stack them.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about doing grip work with those in one of his earliest books. I've got an original copy. This is not far-fetched. You know, you've got a scale weight. Great. And you can buy that same kind of weight today. A regular local customer from Columbus who has performed at my picnics and stuff like that, Sean Dockery, is an elevator guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's part of the elevator union and all that kind of thing. He tells me about when he was an apprentice, he had to move the elevator weights, which they had 50-pounders, in these new buildings for balancing out the elevators, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
it was the same avoirdupois weight that's shown in Thomas Inch's book.
Interesting.
The weights that you see Apollon using in the illustrations of him, because I don't believe there are any performance photographs of him. We're talking about 1800s here.
Oh, yeah.
But there are posters and illustrations from magazines and so on, and the weights are sort of a rectangular, I call it a bread loaf type weight that has a ring handle in the center. And
mm-hmm.
they talk about him being able to do, I think he could press three of them at the same time. And I believe they were 56 pounds apiece. Three of them in one hand.
Oof.
And you think, okay, how could you do that with an avoirdupois weight? I don't think a person could get their hand in there.
Right.
Well, if you look at the way these were made with a ring that's kind of loose in the middle.
Yeah, yeah.
You could do that. You probably bang up your forearm pretty good, but it could be done.
Yeah.
And, he was a performing strongman, probably had some form of gigantism.
Sure.
But, really big dude and had a guy training him and weightlifting, and he was in performance and that sort of thing, so he did real well. But when you talk about the history of this stuff, I don't want to put down anybody because of their marketing goals and that sort of thing.
Right.
But the truth of the matter is finding out who, quote, invented certain basic implements is – it's a little far-fetched. The dumbbell design, Kim Wood clued me into – and I know this is off the topic of the squats. But
it's okay.
We'll get to it. Kim Wood clued me in. He said, keep a lookout for this type of shot that they used in cannons – during the Civil War. And I said, what does shot have to do with it? I'm thinking shot like in a
mm-hmm.
shotgun, like
sure.
you would load your shot loading barbells or dumbbells. No. basically it looked like a classic cast iron globe dumbbell with a bar through the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They load it into the cannon, they'd shoot it out, and I guess one of the heads would be slightly smaller than the other one.
Mm-hmm.
And when it shot out of the cannon, it would spin through the air.
Oh, wow.
So it, instead of having a ball, which is only as big as the diameter of the ball, let's say 4 inches, something like that, maybe 5 inches for a cannonball, instead you've got a dumbbell-shaped thing spinning through the air, and with that spin, you've now got, let's say, 14 inches end-to-end.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's a lot more dangerous.
Yes.
And these things have been found in battlefields, you know, buried in the ground.
Sure.
And, it, you know, is it a stretch to think that the guys loading those cannons would have had contests at how many repetitions they could do with different types of lifts using that cannon ammunition as a dumbbell?
No, not at all.
No. I mean, these guys are sitting around bored most of the time, I would imagine, playing cards and whatnot. They, you know, they probably had boxing competitions
on
their base and dumbbell lifting competitions. You know, they weren't going to be playing Farmville or something.
No.
It's
different experiences, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, anyway, I started on C.O. Jackson's Milo barbell set, no relation to Jackson Barbell out of New Jersey. Andy Jackson of Jackson Barbell, totally different guy. That's how I started. And I played soccer and I swam and loved swimming. Would have loved to have been a swimmer in college, but at 5'3", I probably wouldn't have been much competition for somebody like, you know, who's 6'7".
Phelps or any of those guys. Yeah.
The genetic lottery being what it is, I'm more built to lift weights than be a swimmer.
Swim strokes, so to speak.
Yeah, but I was a lifeguard and stuff like that and enjoyed it and still enjoy it and all that kind of deal. But got into weightlifting like competitive Olympic lifting a little too late. I got in college. And because I saw video footage from the Olympics and Naeem Suleimanoglu, and they were talking about the he was the big guy, Pocket Hercules.
Pocket Hercules,
And they were talking about the builds of the different guys in the lighter weight classes. And I said, look at that. Those guys are all built like me.
Yep.
Maybe that's a sport I should get into.
Yeah.
And my dad, I asked my dad if he knew anybody because I remember hearing stories about him and his buddies lifting weights. And my dad had been a Taekwondo instructor in the Detroit area. So he had all these guys that were doing physical stuff, you know?
Yep.
And he said, oh, call up Bob Sahita. I said, how do I find him? You know, the internet didn't exist.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, his dad had a bread shop in the Detroit area somewhere. Here's how you spell his name. It's an unusual spelling. So... and it's Polish name, so that it's not exactly how it sounds. And my dad had gone to Wayne State University with him. I had a couple classes with Bob, and I called him up. I saw Bob last week. Well, not last week because I was – but
away.
Yeah, I was away, so a week and a half ago. And it turns out that Bob was Norbert Szymanski's was our protege.
Wow.
Bob was a much better Olympic lifter than I've ever been. Bob has a 110, which is no longer the weight class, but right under super heavy, but it was when he was lifting. Clean and jerk 200 kilos.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow. Came and in for anybody that doesn't know what that is, that's 440 pounds. Yeah. So that'll light your sockets up.
Yeah. So, you know, I got into lifting with the right guys. You know, Steve Mansour. A lot of people won't recognize Steve's name. He was a, I think he was a 148-pound lifter in the mid-60s. He would lift with us. I saw Steve, turns out, on his 53rd birthday, okay? He told me, once we started doing our slow lifts, we did snatches and clean and jerks, then you do your slow lifts. So his squats, this is where it ties into the squat, okay? Steve was getting ready for maybe the Masters Nationals or Masters Worlds, something like that. And he says, hey, can you give me a spot here? He's wearing Olympic lifting shoes and shorts.
Yep.
Okay. No super suits, wraps, gloves, belt, nothing. Okay. Pair of shorts and a pair of shoes. I don't know if he even had socks on. Okay. Steve is Iraqi, and I believe he actually lifted for the Iraqi national team in two or three Olympics, and he won our nationals, I believe, twice in the early 60s, because I think he has dual citizenship. I'm not sure. It gets in the squat rack. It's a homemade, angled peg-type squat rack in Bob's basement, right? And he's got 135 pounds on the bar. He adds another pair of 45s, does his next set of three. Another pair of 45s, does another set of three. And we're talking about Olympic lifter squats here.
Eye bar.
Totally, you know, all the way down, ass to your ankles, all that kind of thing. And another 45 pounds. And I'm still spotting him, but I haven't had to do anything yet. He's doing sets of three with no problem. Another 45. And then we go up to 530. Okay? And I said, so is this your limit? And he says, well, yeah, spot me. I'm doing 530 because I turned 53 today.
Ha, ha, ha. That's nice.
Really? Okay. Yeah. And he says, it could be an issue, so, you know, be ready to pull me up if I need it. He didn't need me standing there. He was messing with me. He's down, up, down, up, down, up, racked at himself. He didn't need me there. He could have, you know, he trained in his own basement also by himself, and he knew what he could do. he was messing with the new kid.
Yeah, but that's pretty impressive, let me tell you.
Oh, God, yeah. You know, 53-year-old guy, rock bottom squatting 530 for a triple. That's, you know, that's...
Well, like I told you yesterday, we had Frank DeMeo on, you know, and you know, they call him the underground strength coach, and the cave is where they train. And I didn't realize he told me he was in his 60s, and he said, well, I'm 64. And I mean, the stuff this guy does is phenomenal. And it's like, you know, we got into that a lot yesterday, Raj, and it was like, your work ethic, obviously, when you're younger, depends on what kind of parenting you got. That, you know, work, heavy work, you know, that's what he said. Most of his stuff was all laborious work. And we had talked about you and I, and we've talked with everybody about the DNA deal with lifting. And I think if you went, you know, if we ever did a show, which would be interesting, where if we can get this round table thing set and we could get a few guys like that that were back in the day, even the guys now, and you find out kind of like what their history was. What had you done up to that point where you were lifting or lifting and doing the laborious work? My bet would probably be most of these people at one time have done shovel-ready work.
I think
that type of work transcends into the lifting. As far as squatting, and we were talking about the ligament and tendon strength, I can remember years ago when you would put out a DVD, you know, on ligament and tendon strength. I don't know if you still have that.
Yeah, it's actually now, been my most popular publication of any sort. It was among the first, videotapes I did, which I had professionally edited and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's now on DVD. I did three videos at the same time because I had a background working in video, and I knew that if once I got into the studio and I had this voiceover woman who was – we were going to do a commercial and all that sort of thing for the front of the DVD, that sort of thing. When I got everything in there, I needed to use my studio time, right? So I had three different DVDs I did. I covered the 2000 All-Around Weightlifting Association Nationals. I did one called Basking in the Sun, a Stone Lifter's Saturday. And I did tendon and ligament strength training. Well, the tendon and ligament strength training is still my best-selling publication.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I learned that type of training from Smitty when I was at York, and it was based on what he did with Bill March and Lee James and all the York lifters there. It was exactly what they worked on when they were doing the first commercial power rack setup stuff and it trying to figure out exactly what worked. Now, what a lot of people don't realize with that, and I do mention this in the video, is the times that we talk about for an isometric hold, which is not a hold. It's trying to push through a sticking point, which is static. So, I'll have people say, well, you just hold it in that position. No. It's not holding it in that position. If you can push through it, you push through it. You don't just do a static hold.
This is how I always equate it, too, just to interrupt a second.
Go ahead.
I've always been a big power rack guy. I still am. I'm working on some big stuff right now. Now, the other night, for instance, I'm shifting up and down with a lot of weights right now. I'm going to start doing the pushes, for time, obviously. But what I've been doing now, which I think is I don't know how many people do this. You've probably done it. But I like to do all my warm-ups with a thing I call the Big Three, which we are putting out with our new The Weight is Over DVD next month. I do a thing where I do squat pull-ups, long strength good mornings, and I will do either some type of shadow boxing with heavy hands, or I'll do walks. And I try to go egg timer, 15 to 20 minutes straight. Now, they might say, well, that's not enough. I got news for you. This stuff toasts you. And if you try to do too much right off the bat, it'll neurologically bury you. So the reason why I do this is because I'm not a guy that likes that conventional 135, 225, 315. Okay, I think that's a waste of time. I really do. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people that will disagree with me. But once you find a warm-up that works, that's not putting stress on those ligaments and tendons. If you read anything from John McKeon, who used to write. I know that he did write for Pavel there. I don't know if he is. I've lost track of him. I wish I could find him.
I can hook you up with John.
Well, then I want to talk to John.
He's an all-rounder guy.
He's a killer.
He's awesome.
And he wrote a ton of articles in the old Hard Gainer.
Yep.
And that was an exceptional magazine back in the day. It was Stuart McRoberts, who used to write for Perry Raider. Well, I had read a lot of articles, and he got into a lot of this stuff, too, and they had hooked up with Leonard Schwartz at the time, Heavy Hands.
Yep.
And the CO2 and the amount of oxygen that you could dump into your bloodstream was off the charts. Now, I started experimenting with this stuff years ago, and there was stuff Doug Heppern wrote many years ago, who I followed quite heavily. And this kind of started me into it where, you know, he'd go to X amount of weight, then he'd drop it down, and we'd do sets of threes or whatever. And we just started getting into more and more of this type of training, and you could see the results from it. But I've really veered off. But what I'm working on right now, because I've got a very, very big squat in mind for Christmas time to coincide with getting ready for Iceland, I opened up the other night rock bottom, which, you know, I'm not an Olympic lifter. My butt's not to the floor, but I'm right at parallel or about an inch below it. Now, this is starting now. Remember, we're not using a rebound here. So if anybody knows anything about these dead stop squats, not only do I feel they're probably one of the best movements you could ever do, if you've got the patience to you got to drop your ego at the door of those. I don't care if you're an 800-pound squatter or not. You start at the very bottom. It's going to humble you mighty fast. And not only that, it can shear you basically in half. So the other night, I did 407 right below parallel for five singles for my opening. That was after the warm-up of the big three. I'm working on, you know, the highest warm-up I can get. I'm not going to go out and put the weight I'm going to put out because if something should happen, then you're going to be held to it, and I'm not going to do that. But as we move along with these shows with Roger, I'm going to keep updating, you know, what I'm doing. So, you know, we take little morsels at a time. But
that rock bottom that you're talking about, where you start with that,
yes, sir.
That is where Smitty would have us start with the isometrics.
Yep.
And that would be your first position. And you do your squat first, then your press, then your deadlift movement. And you can cycle it up. And I've cycled it in different directions with, changing that order. And I've also done a bench press position because I've had different friends who wanted to work their bench press. And that works too. It's the same concept.
I do that, it's like the old school stuff, the floor press.
Yeah.
If I'm going to do anything, I lay on my platform, set the rods in the power rack wherever I want to hit. It depends what kind of bar I'm using that night. I might use the E bar, they call it, where you'll have three different positions and I can work the chest at different positions. But normally I'm using a bar that's not really good, where, you know, if it comes down hard and it bends it or breaks it, I'm not worried about it. But normally I use Iron Mines straight bar because that thing can take a shellacking. And just to let you know, I'm not getting paid for this either. I'm just telling people out there, I've bought every York bar off Roger. But the problem with me with York bars is I have their utmost respect for them. And I really don't want to damage him because I've got some nice stuff over the years I've collected. Nothing against Iron Mines bar. No disrespect either. The only bar I ever use to squat is the Buffalo bar.
Mm-hmm.
That thing could hold a friggin', you know, a tank on it and not bend.
You know, when I worked at York for the top squat position, I always used a solid 2-inch thick bar.
That's a great idea too.
Yeah, and the reason was not because it was a thick bar and I thought it was going to improve my grip or something. It's because it had zero bend in it.
Zero bending. You know what that's bringing in muscular-wise? Your traps, everything. I mean, you've got to hold that bar. In case anybody doesn't know anything about a 2-inch bar, just the balance of holding that. If you're doing it Olympic, I'm not talking, 6 inches down your back.
Right.
I'm talking right up on the traps, right where you can feel it, like in the back of your neck, that little bone that you can make real sore in your spine. I'll tell you what, the carryover effect from that, you might not move as much right away, mainly because of the bar being solid and it doesn't revolve or bend. But here's the deal. That will build your upper back like nothing else, too. Just the holding of it and the balancing of it with weight. So go on, Raj. Hit it.
It's a funny kind of thing, too. And when I switched to that bar from a York power bar, because the power bar was stiffer than the Olympic bar and so on and so forth. And when you're doing that kind of heavy weight, on an Olympic bar, you get some real flex in there. So you're not really getting that honest isometric with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I switched to the stiffer power bar, and then I switched to the 2-inch bar. What I found was the 2-inch bar did throw off my back squat position a little bit.
Yeah.
It didn't matter to me because the actual number – of weight that I was moving, if I was doing it in that style of moving an actual weight versus pressing against something that was static like the pins, is the number is just a relative number that so that you can put it in your book to see if you're improving or not improving. It's that number is not going to be like the number for when you actually do your squats. What will be the same or should be the same is your back angle. And when you switch to that thicker bar, and there's even a difference between a power bar and Olympic bar, but I didn't notice it so much because, we're talking about millimeters there.
Right.
When you're talking almost an inch in diameter difference, that throws off your back angle a little bit. So I had to make the choice of, do I want the stiffness and strength of that bar, or do I want or is the back angle more important? And because I was training specifically for Olympic lifting and doing some of the all-around lifts, and I was doing it all high bar squatting too. I've never been a power lifter. I competed in one power lifting contest in my life, and I did it because some friends were doing it. And I did everything Olympic lifter style. So
right, exactly. That's
never been my thing. I've never trained for a one rep max in a back squat, for example. And my hat's off to people who do that, and that's their sport, and that's cool. It's another strength sport. It's interesting. But that's not what I do. This type of training is great for powerlifting, and some great powerlifting records have been made doing this type of thing. But I would say that if somebody's a power lifter, so they're training for a specific organization's rules in the power lifter squat, you probably want to use the type of bar you would use in competition with the back angle position that you would use in competition. But that would just be for that lift. Because it's so close to the competition lift that you could throw off your technique. So, the power lifter would probably want to do that. But for me, I wasn't competing in a back squat. I was competing in a snatch and a clean and jerk. When I got into doing the all rounds, at one point I was working on my two dumbbell clean and jerk and things like that. So it's still really – I was not a power lifter then either. But I can see where somebody might want to modify their technique. But when you're doing that first squat position in the rack, you should be squeezing yourself under the bar.
Under the bar, right.
And you start from actual rock bottom. And mentally, that takes a lot because it, no matter how used to that you get and how much you've trained with that, you are never going to use as much weight from that position as you can in a normal take the bar off the rack, do a back squat down and up type position. So mentally, you've got to be aware that you are going to do some percentage less. And
well, I'll tell you what. I usually at times have two racks going. I'll go from dead stop squat to dead stop press overhead. Now I can use a number of things. I've got a piece of equipment we constructed here where I can use any monster size dumbbell I want, dead stop. I can use the Viking press that I had made, or I can use a conventional Olympic bar.
See,
all right?
Now that's ideal because like what you were talking about where you want to be fresh with your from a neuromuscular perspective, in these classic power rack oriented tendon and ligament strength workouts where they tested the amount of time and repetitions and time for trying to push through those holds.
Oh yeah.
They tested that electrically with the Isotron machine.
Okay.
So, you know, you go onto the internet, there are all these people that say, you need to hold it for this, you need to hold it for that. And it first of all, it's not holding.
No.
It's what I call a static movement where you are trying to push through a position that you can't make it through.
Nope.
So it looks like you're holding. In fact, you're not. And so you're doing a single flex through there, and you can't make it beyond that range of motion is what you're doing. And I show a couple different ways of doing this in the video, but they tested that with the Isotron, and the muscle after that flex automatically relaxes and then starts to recontract. So if you're holding that position for, you know, I've heard people say as long as like 20 seconds, which
that's bull.
It's total because they don't understand the point of it. It's like calculus where you're actually doing limits and what's beyond the limit? Nothing. That is your limit. So you're not holding it. If you're going for 20 seconds, then that muscle has refired several times. Range of motion.
Okay.
Repetition.
But here's the deal, too. And anybody that tells you this has never happened to them, I'm not a rookie with power rack training. You'll get to the point when you are pushing through time and space there, as I call it. What will happen is you'll fail. This will literally drop you right back down on your starting pins.
Yep.
You only have so much capacity. You got to look at it this way. Your whole body's involved in this, but your thighs alone, the hip girdle, everything, they're at a point now where I guess you could use the word the muscles are fully involved. They're lit. They're pushing. And you're only going to have so much in you. And I'll tell you what, in all the years I've done it, I've never even tried to hold it to 20 because, number one, if I could hold it's a waste of time. But if I could hold a count of 3 to 5, which is big, because let's just say you weigh 250 pounds and you've got 550 starting from dead stop, and we've got the other set of rods, say, 4 inches above or two, depending on how thick the bar is, and when you move it, do you got enough space to move it where, you know, even if you're moving a quarter inch, can you do that? Okay, that's your first thing. But second of all, once you've engaged those legs and your body like that, I'm here to tell you, your body's only going to go so far, and like I said before, you will get rifled right back down on those rods if you're doing it right. I've trained with many people that have done that with me, and they'll be like, how come you couldn't hold it longer, whatever. I said, you just see what happened with my body. I mean, you're in a position, I always tell people when they do these, pretend you're sitting bolt upright in a chair and push as hard as you can. The body's only going to engage so long, and you're going right back. You know, it's called gravity. It yanks you back down. So,
you're exactly right, because that time is 6 seconds.
Yeah.
And that's a very short period of time. When you're saying 3 to 5 seconds, depending on, when you start that stopwatch.
Without a doubt.
That 5 seconds could be the 6 seconds. And I'm not saying that there aren't differences in humans where maybe for one guy it's 5 seconds and another guy it's 7 seconds. You're splitting hairs there. But what you're experiencing is that relaxation of the muscle fiber and getting ready to refire, but you're at a maximum. So when instead of having that zero range of motion push, you were at your max, the muscle refired, and it dropped you down because you relaxed the muscles.
Absolutely.
And it was not an intentional relaxation of the muscles on your part.
Nope.
It's the muscle fiber and the electric impulse that goes through the muscle fiber. So,
go ahead,
yeah,
Roger.
And that's it. It's
well, and I also think it's a mechanism too, where it safeguards you, because boy, you're in that position, you know, you and I both know what could happen to you physically and ligament wise and tendon. Mm-hmm. You could shear something in pieces. Hey, look, I'll tell you this. When I do bottom position, regardless when I'm going to go to that day, after the warm up, say I start in at 400 and I got, you know, I want to hit maybe, I'm only going to do maybe 3 or 4 singles, and I want to hit to anywhere from 530 to 550, all right? And I'm successful. Because I know I'm not going to do this again for at least 10 days minimum, all right? I'll always try to hit a PR if I want, or even hit 20 pounds over my max. Well, here's what I'll tell you right now. And any of you wanting to try this, you're going to be pretty physically taxed after hitting, say, like any weight. You can pick out any weight you want to. And I like just doing it to see what will happen. So let's say I've hit 550 for the day. And I said to myself, well, I don't think I got enough in me for 6, but I'm going to try 570. So we're just going to slap a 10 on each side. Okay. So I blow that thing up, but as soon as I go to push through that pin, the most I can do is tap it, and I basically just crumble right down. What happens is you've reached your maximum with your body, with what you're going to push. But, you know, it's not so much – it's not an isometric hold. I guess I just call it like a little tap, you know. But right there, that increases your strength. But what you're going to find with that type of volume of work – you're not coming back in 2 days and trying that again, because I guarantee you won't even move.
No, no.
Right?
I tell guys, and I was just telling a longtime customer about this. He was asking about the chain bar lifting, you know, the hand and thigh lift, the harness lift, the hip lift, neck lift, that kind of thing. And I show an introduction to that at the end of the tendon and ligament strength video. I show a couple different things with it, because that's the way it was done before people had power racks.
Sure.
And John Grimmick did that. Lots of guys did it. It was well-known technique for strongmen.
Yeah.
And you know, Grimmick did it in his attic as a kid using chains hanging from the rafters and
from
the ceiling.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But the when I had a perfect workout situation where my training partner would be well trained at that point and we could both do these workouts and it cycle through it as quickly as we could. My entire workout, including warm-ups, would be 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So I'd do 5 minutes of warming up and stretching and that kind of thing. And then the three different lift positions, the squat, deadlift, and standing press. I didn't do the bench press position. Would take less than 10 minutes. Then my partner would go, and you know, we'd be switching things around as fast as possible between rack positions. I would be asleep on the couch within 20 minutes after I was done lifting.
Without a doubt.
And I'd sleep solid for an hour and a half.
Oh, yeah.
Because I put absolutely everything I could muster into that time period. And, you know, I'll have people say, well, didn't you get a sweat going and that kind of thing? Look, a real lifter can get a sweat going before he ever lifts a weight. Before he picks
Without
it up off
doubt.
The ground, you can be dripping sweat when you're getting ready to do that first, you know, your first 135-pound power clean or whatever. And because it's a mental focus thing. And that's why I brought up this topic. Is more the mental aspect of teaching yourself to tap into that strength. And
this
is the motivation and muscle.
podcast. It ties right in, man.
Yeah, exactly. And I have to tell you my favorite weightlifting quote, okay? And I know I've told you this before, Eric, but it's John Grimmick, do more squats. And... And I never met John.
Right.
But I shared an office with the guy who shared an office with him, Jan Dellinger. And John would be at the Hoffman birthday picnics, which is what my Atomic Athletic Great Black Swamp Old Time Strongman picnics were based off of.
Yep.
And here's John Grimmick, Mr. America, Mr. Universe, Olympian, poster boy for York Barbell, and guys would conglomerate around him. There'd be, you know, 20 guys forming a ring around him, and he'd be cornered with questions. And guys would say, you know, these are my workouts, and just do more squats.
Yep.
Well, I'm already squatting like this, you know, 2 days a week or whatever. And John says, no, do more squats.
Yep.
Whatever you're doing, do more. And they'd say, well, you mean more weight? He says, if you feel like you can do more weight, do more weight. If, you know, think of a new variation on a squat. Do overhead squats. Do front squats.
Sure.
Do hack squats. Do partial squats. Do one-legged squats if you want. But do more squats. And that's what it's about. Do more squats.
Well, we can talk. I can tell you two things. Yesterday when Frank was on, I put that to him. I said, now you're 64 years old. If I told you you could only do one movement the rest of your days here on Earth, what would it be? Squat just flew out of his mouth, okay? Now, but then again, we can look at this too. And this is my favorite lifter, or one of the top three with me always. Paul Anderson, how did he build all that power? Go back and read about him. He squatted for years. I mean, you know, look at the base. Whether you like the size of the man or not, you know, you'll hear people say, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. Let me tell you something. We talked about this before. That picture I got of him on Muscle Beach, you know, where everybody's in suits, it looks like it's the Cosa Nostra sitting there around him. And it was quite a picture, I mean, to see. And, you know, there's Anderson pressing off of racks, you know, 450 pounds like nothing, standing bolt upright. Now, granted, he was built for all that stuff, in my opinion. That's just genetics. But let me tell you, those squats enabled him to do everything. Because if you aren't used to holding a weight on your shoulder, supporting, you know, everybody likes to use that word core. That's all BS. You know what it is? It's abdominal training. Look at any of the old stuff. Those guys were brutes, man. That's what it's all about. The squat, to me, sets up every lift. And I know people will argue with me, deadlift, deadlift, deadlift. I guess it's to each his own, but when I was taught by people, and Anthony, I read about, it was always a squat. So I used the squat as my setup for everything, you know?
Here's an interesting thing. You mentioned the deadlift versus the squat kind of deal.
Yep.
When I was a kid, my dad was teaching me about how to do this.
Yeah.
Are you hearing me here,
Eric? Yeah, you're fine.
Okay, all right. So my dad's teaching me how to do this. We didn't have a power rack in our basement.
Right.
So he says, this is the way I want you to squat. And what he actually showed me was a Jefferson lift.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know that it was called the Jefferson lift at that time. I found out later as I learned these things. He said, you'll have guys do a deadlift like this, and he showed
right.
me a conventional deadlift, which is forward, but I want you to do a squat, which is more upright, mm-hmm. and you need to do your hand position this way and then your hand position this
right.
way, because for those of you who don't know, the Jefferson lift is also called a straddle deadlift.
Yep.
So what it allows you to do is have a very upright position when you deadlift, but it does give you a kind of strange torsion to your back too. So
yep.
if you've got back issues, that might not be the best way to go.
No, no,
People can do massive amounts of weight. Bob Hirsch, probably the best deadlifter of all time at any weight class, and he's pretty much unknown to the powerlifting world because he was an all-rounder.
Mm-hmm.
As a 165-pounder, I believe, he did a 605 Jefferson lift.
You got to, you know, something. Now, we're talking Jefferson the way you stand, the bars in the middle of your body, right?
Yeah.
Your legs.
Yeah,
okay.
You've got one
because
hand
I don't know if any, I don't know if people know is, and you got a weird hand position because you got one hand in front of you and one turned behind you. So it'd be something that you really have to get used to. But I just wanted to get in on that in case anybody doesn't know what a Jefferson lift is. It's a pretty interesting lift. But like you said, you don't want to do anything like that with a bad back because does put some torque on you. Go ahead, Raj.
Yeah,
go ahead. I just
that lift goes in the category of actually go to your doctor, have your spine checked out and all that kind of thing. And even then, there are people who will say, don't ever do a Jefferson lift. But that being said, I like them. John Grimmick liked them. Grimmick said that the way Jefferson lifts were supposed to be done, and this is verified by reading Calvert's Super Strength, which was the only instructional training manual that Grimmick kept on his shelf, and he said it was the best book ever and is the only one you ever needed. But that being said, I've got a whole bookcase full of books, so
you too.
Know, on that level, I didn't listen to Grimmick, but in Super Strength, it shows what Grimmick talks about here. Grimmick said that the Jefferson lift was actually supposed to be done as a partial lift.
Oh, okay.
Where you have the weights starting sitting on blocks. So the barbell starts from the knee, and you actually do it for repetitions.
Ooh.
So it's a partial movement, but when the bar starts at the knee or just below the knee, something like that, you've actually got less torsion on the spine.
Not only that, man, you know, think about this for a second. You know, everybody's always talking about grip. Can you imagine the gorilla grip you would have, say, starting just below the knees, you're straddling that bar, you set your hands up, and you pull? Are you kidding me? Holy cow, man. You know, years ago I bought that harness from you that Grimmick has in the pictures, and the bar, I mean, I haven't touched that in quite a while because ever since Rob and I did the hip belt show, you know, T-Rex, that's out today. You might want to take a look at it. He did 405 last night, so he sends me the video of it.
That's great.
And he says, what do you think? It looked great, and he's doing reps, and it's funny as hell because he's got little T-Rex watching him. And, you know, he comes right into the camera. He's like, hips, back, glutes, hamstrings. He go, and he's got a sweat on him like you wouldn't believe. So, you know, once again, you got another established lifter who's looking for something that's not loading the spine but can get maximum effect to the areas we just talked about, your thighs, your hamstrings, lower back, you know, your hips. Just think about how hard your hip girdle's getting popped. And, you know, when you're doing events, the stuff he likes to do, I mean, you better have some torque down there because you're not doing anything then. So I really enjoyed it. I mean, it's nice to see what we're doing here is starting to have a cause and effect on people. And, you know, the Jefferson lift might be something that, hey, I might, you know, I got to go out tomorrow night. I might just throw that up on a set of blocks and just use it like as a warm-up. Just see how it feels because, obviously, especially your arms, you want to have everything very warm, you know, anything with bicep stuff.
Work
you know.
Into it. It's
exactly, exactly.
I'm still a fan of Jefferson lifts. I do Jefferson lifts. There's a sequence of lifts that I like to do where I include that, and I do them off the floor. But it will make your upper legs feel like they – I mean, you can – there's nothing else that I've seen quite like a Jefferson lift for making your thighs just feel like they're going to explode.
Pop.
Yeah. It's an interesting lift. It's a strength lift. It's a training lift. You know, they keep records in it in the all rounds, but I use it as a training lift for variety.
Yeah.
But my dad had me do it because he didn't want me doing back squats in the basement by myself without spotter and no power rack.
That makes sense.
And I was a kid. But
that's,
you know, there's a real lineage there with Grimmick talking about it and actually doing it and other guys and that kind of thing. It's a neat lift that I really wouldn't recommend for the tendon and ligament strength training type thing, partials and a rack. Don't do that.
Right.
But as far as just another kind of technically it's a deadlift, but it's more like a squat. The movement to me, depending on how I'm doing it and putting it into my workout and that sort of thing, almost it feels very similar to a trap bar deadlift.
Sure.
Because you're so upright and the center of gravity is similar
right
to that.
Yeah.
The trap bar is probably a safer way to do it because you're not putting any torsion on the spine. On the other hand, the old-time strongmen believed that you need to keep the spine supple and strengthen it in all kinds of different ways. And they were doing things like bent presses and side presses and all that kind of stuff. So you've got two different philosophies there. And
well, I think like Kenneth and Raj, you got to go out and find out for yourself. I mean, you know, without being, you know, careless, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to pick this up. We're at really near the end of the show.
Okay.
I want to do a part two on this because what I'd like to do is I'd like to come up. We'll talk about this off air. Let's do some routines for some people. You know, maybe they want to get and try this. There's a lot more we can talk about power racks. Obviously, we can talk
sure.
about quality of power racks, mm-hmm. what's out mm-hmm. there. But what I'd like to do is I'd like to, you know, this would be a good series to do. You know, we'll do part two next week. And we'll hit upon, like, the way to do it, you know, whether we're going to start at bottom, middle, top, all-in-one workout. Obviously, we can talk about rep ranges. We can talk about bars, which we hit a little bit today. But kind of give – we'll kind of give everybody out there that's never tried this and has thought about it but doesn't know which way to go. Obviously, we've got your DVD out there. But mm-hmm. we'll do something now where you and I are working currently here.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, we both have a lot of experience in it, and we'll deliver some stuff to some people. Does that sound good?
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Also, there's something else I wanted to ask you now, and I don't remember what it was. I don't know. It'll probably come to me after we hang up. But why don't you? We'll plan on. Next Tuesday, obviously, getting together on part two of this. And also, if I can get everything working, we're going to try to get a three-way going where you and I and Rob can talk on Friday. I've got an idea about something I want to talk about. Also, too, I'm thinking about naming one of the shows, which I haven't talked to you or Rob about, and I don't know if you're going to like it or not. But I'm dedicating this to a very good friend of mine who just passed away a couple months ago of cancer. He'd been my chiropractor for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. I had done a podcast on him probably about a month ago, which, just to let everybody know, we have more than 11 podcasts out there. We had a little problem with iTunes with the feed, and I'm not going to get into all the technical end because most people don't care and don't understand it. But just to let you know that we're working on getting all of my podcasts out there. I started at the end of April of this year, and I did quite a few of them right up till the middle of May, and then we had major problems with the podcasting, so we don't have anything for June. So technically, everything you're seeing is with all the guys that started in early July. So we're hoping to get that all back and working. We're working on it right now behind the scenes.
Now, Eric,
but,
do you
have go ahead, Brian.
Yeah. Do you have more podcasts available on your that are not available on iTunes that they might be able to get on your website or on Stitcher?
I don't know I'm not sure if they're out there. That's what we're trying to find out right now, if I can go back to previous ones, and I'll check that out today.
Mm-hmm.
If we can do that, if so, I will put that up either when we talk or I'll just put it out on the blog, and that way it'll go out to social media so you can see it. But the thing was, John Ridge was the chiropractor who passed away, and he was a great guy. I looked at him kind of like a father figure because I had lost my dad, you know, about 25 years ago. He was a guy that was behind me with the business here, who pushed me. He'd been an entrepreneur his whole life, New Hampshire guy. I mean, I could go over and talk to him for hours, and we were friends, too. I'd be down the house with his wife and family. Great guy. But John used to always call me Silent Strength. And, you know, I can remember he and his wife had gone away to Canada 5 years ago, and he sent me this big picture of this big striped tiger postcard. And it was beautiful, and he wrote me a nice note, and he said, I picked this postcard because the tiger on the front reminded me of you, and he goes, I call you Silent Strength. So in John's dedication, I am going to call one of these shows Silent Strength.
That's good stuff.
you know, whether it's you and I, you know, once we get everything rolling with Eric in Canada, you know, obviously we're going to have a slide that's going to announce you and I, and the name of the show is going to be Silent Strength. So that's in that's just something that I felt, you know, I'm going to run it by both of you. It's not like a contest to see who gets it, but that's in John's honor, because I know John's looking down on me right now and smiling right now as we're talking about him. And I would like to, like Jimmy, I'd like to dedicate a little bit to John too, because of the influence he's had on me, and he always stood by me when a lot of people decided not to. He encouraged, and you know, I miss the guy dearly, believe me. I can't tell you how much I miss him. So I want to tell everybody that. I didn't really want to spring that in on you, Roger, without telling you offline, but I figured that you could understand why.
I totally get it. That's cool.
Yeah. So before we take off, give everybody the website. Give anything you got coming up shortly. Obviously, we're going to touch base on part two, or maybe we'll see what happens Friday. So take it away, my friend.
Sounds good. Yeah, Roger LaPointe. With Atomic Athletic. The website is atomicathletic.com, and you can check out the blog through the website. It's just the upper right-hand corner, B-L-O-G. You can see it up there. And you can sign up for my email newsletter that I've been doing for 15 years now, the Atomic Athletic Bombproof Bulletin. You can sign up for that on the lower left. And this Saturday, maybe I will see you at the Detroit Highland Games. I'll have a table up next to the heavy events athletic tent, as I have had for every year now for 13 or 14 years. There'll be banners up there, and sign up for the Open Farmers Walk contest. There are cash prizes. It's very cool. You have your
and
chance
Raj,
to compete.
If you got, if you go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, you have your chance to compete against anybody else who signs up, which might include some of the pros who, by the way, are worn out by the end of the day. so you know, I've definitely seen some much lighter weight guys who are fresh beat some gigantic professional Highland Games guys. You'd say, oh, no chance am I going to beat that guy. And then the guy trips in the first 5 feet and he's done.
Yep.
So,
he's finished. Yeah.
You know, somebody who might have been training in the farmer's walk literally walks away with a prize.
Do you got, if you've got any pictures or anything you want me to put on FBC site, I'd be more than happy to do that.
Yeah,
and if you have
absolutely.
And if you have anything after the contest, you know, we'd love to post them and, you know, get you out there if you want to do that. There's something else I was going to talk. I keep getting all these ideas and I'm just throwing them out.
That's all right. I'll be on again.
But oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. If you're all set, then I'm going to sign off too. Obviously, this is Motivation and Muscle, the podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. We are sponsored by Fiorello Barbell. That's www.fiorellobarbellco.com. We're on Twitter, at Fiorello Eric. We are on Facebook, obviously. We are on Stitcher and iTunes, and like I always say, we are being heard all over the world. We're going to have a big announcement in 2 weeks. I'm very excited about. We are still looking forward to Iceland in next May. You know, God willing, I stay nice and healthy. Obviously, we are launching the business and the new product in a few weeks, which is a big deal here, because that's going to really foster everything that's going to be coming down the road with us. Dennis is working on his goal of 229 to 230 on Christmas Day, where we're going to take him from 222 and bring him up and make him a hell of a lot more muscular and stronger, and we're going to show you how to do that. Obviously, you know, Roger and I are going to be doing part two of the ligament training, obviously, but we're going to really hit the power rack next week even harder. And hopefully we can give you some ideas and maybe a few routines and some really good stuff out there. But don't forget, Roger's got a DVD all about training out there, so you know how to get out to AtomicAthletic.com. Give that a look-see, and I think we've got everything, Rog. Once again, thanks a lot for coming on the show. I greatly appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me, Eric.
It's always a pleasure. So for Roger LaPointe, this is Eric Fiorello. You know, go out today and make a mark on the world. You know, go do something that you've been putting off. Or if you see somebody that needs some help, go out and give them a hand. It's not going to hurt you at all. It's going to make you a better person. So have a good rest of the week. Hopefully we'll be we're going to be talking to you quite a bit. We've got quite a few new people coming on the show. This afternoon we got Wendy Myers, very interesting lady. And we've got many more shows. And don't forget, our boy T-Rex is going to be on Thursday night. And Roger can attest to him. He introduced me to this guy. And I'm telling you, he's a blast. So we'll be talking to you, you know, this week. And obviously, you know, Roger and I do a show on Tuesdays. And we might be doing some more stuff down the road. So thanks, everybody. Have a good week.
You're listening to Motivation and Muscle, the best podcast connecting your brain to your brawn.